Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. Western Iowa man dies as tornadoes hit state. 17 twisters or more struck Iowa on a single day last week. By the Gazette. A man seeking shelter in his basement as a strong tornado tore through western Iowa's Minden has died of his injuries as forecasters began determining the strength of at least 17 twisters reported in the state on a single day last week. The man, identified by family members as Nicholas Ring, 63, became trapped in his basement Friday and was taken to a hospital as soon as he was freed. He died Saturday morning, according to WOWT-TV of Omaha. Ring's wife suffered a broken ankle, the Omaha World-Herald reported. The tornado that ripped Friday evening through Minden, a town of about 600 in Pottawatomie County, about 30 miles northeast of Omaha, damaged about 180 structures, flattening several, and tossed vehicles, leading officials there to declare a state of emergency and institute a curfew. The National Weather Service on Monday rated the Minden storm as an EF3, or severe tornado, with peak winds of 160 miles per hour and carving a lengthy path of nearly 41 miles for over an hour, lasting from 5:25 to 6:29 p.m. The large twister coincided with a tornado nearby, so both were occurring at the same time, side by side. In fact, there were damage indicators of EF1 damage and high-end EF3 damage within only 100 yards of each other. The most intense damage was on the far end side of Minden. Numerous homes were uninhabitable and several homes were completely destroyed, Weather Service said. The path of the Minden tornado also went through Harlan, where mobile Doppler radar data showed winds of up to 224 miles per hour on the ground. Such winds are equivalent to what is expected from an EF5 or catastrophic tornado. But since EF scale is a damage scale and it measures ground wind speed, the rating is lower. Despite Minden homes and businesses being ripped apart and residents seeking shelter with friends and relatives elsewhere, the Tri-Center Community School District sought to instill a sense of normal by continuing to hold classes Monday in its schools located nearby Neola. We're going to have school as normally as possible. Some of you have had to relocate. If you share with us where you are now, we will do our best to get your kids to and from school, the district posted on social media, and said a bus would pick up and drop off students from two designated spots in Minden. Lots of people have been reaching out to the school to provide assistance with any possible needs you might have. Please let us know what you need, and we will get it to you, the district posted. Do you need help with a place to stay, basic necessities, cleaning up, etc.? We have washing machines at school and ice and showers, electricity and access to so much more. Really, ask for whatever you need. If you know of folks that need help but might not ask, please ask for them. Governor Kim Reynolds, who issued a disaster proclamation for the county to activate state aid and grants, toured the damage Saturday afternoon, thanking volunteers who provided food as families and merchants tried to deal with the devastation. The people of Iowa are coming together just like we always do to help one another, she posted on social media platform X. Monday, she issued disaster proclamations for 8 additional counties: Clark, Crawford, Harrison, Mills, Polk, Ringgold, Shelby, and the National Weather Service said 17 tornadoes struck Iowa on Friday, although there could be more. One line generally followed a northeast path out of Omaha area, walloping Minden and continuing up through Monona County. Another line formed further east, going through Winterset and the Des Moines metro area. The Weather Service, which dispatched teams to investigate the damage, said it could be days before details of every storm could be determined. But by Monday, it had revealed details of 15 of them in Iowa, so far rated as EF3 or lower on a 0 to 5 scale. The first of the documented storms struck at 4:52 p.m. Friday, and the last ended at 9:02 p.m. Friday. Besides the EF3 Minden storm, Pacific Junction to Pony Creek Park, Mills County, EF1, 2.7-mile path. Omaha to Crescent in Pottawatomie County, EF3 16.05 mile path. Southern Pottawatomie County, EF3 13.31 mile path. Manila area, Shelby and Crawford counties, EF2 9.2 mile path. Defiance, Shelby and Crawford counties, EF1 12.32 mile path. Creston, Union County, EF2 6.83 mile path. Afton, West, Union and Madison counties, EF2 11.69 mile path. Afton East, Union and Madison counties, EF2 10.97 mile path. Moffett Reservoir, Madison and Dallas counties, EF0 1.69 mile path. Monroe, Jasper County, EF1 2.23 mile path. Tingley, Ringgold County, EF2 10.25 mile path. Mount Air, Ringgold County, EF1 26.26 mile path. Osceola, Clark County, EF2 6.25 mile path. Pleasant Hill, Polk County, EF2 7.44 mile path. Although 17 storms in a single day is not typical, it's not unheard of. On March 5, 2022, 15 storms struck Iowa, killing 6 people and injuring 5. And only weeks later, on April 12, 2022, another round tore through Iowa, 13 twisters, injuring 1. And on March 31, 2023, the Weather Service confirmed over 20 tornadoes hit Iowa. But April does not usually have that many tornadoes in the entire month, according to the National Weather Service records dating to 1950. Although 2022, with its 42 tornadoes, and 2001, with 40 tornadoes, were among the 6 exceptions noted in April in those 7 decades of records. Nationwide, over a 4-day period that began last Thursday, over 100 tornadoes were reported, most of them Friday and Saturday. Besides the Friday outbreak that killed the man in Minden, at least 4 people, including an infant, died in tornadoes Saturday night when it struck Oklahoma. At least 22 twisters struck that state, all of them rated EF3 or higher. Here's how closing hills is saving Iowa City Schools $1.66 million. Reduction of staff will be done through attrition, not non-renewal of contracts, by Grace King, The Gazette, Hills. Closing Hills Elementary School at the end of the academic year, a decision made by the Iowa City School Board last month, is saving the district $1.66 million annually through the reduction of staff through attrition. Hills Elementary staff who want to remain in the Iowa City Community School District are being moved into other open positions across the district. No educators or non-instructional staff are losing their jobs. Instead, the reduction in staff is being made by people leaving the district for retirement or other opportunities. The $1.66 million saved by closing Hills Elementary equates to 8.9 instructional full-time staff members, which includes teachers and librarians, and about 25 non-instructional full-time staff members, such as the principal, other school administrators, school counselors, custodians, and stipends for after-school club sponsors, said Adam Kurth, Iowa City Schools' chief finance officer. A small amount of cost savings is operational, like utilities, Kurth said. We worked with each staff member individually to determine their placement in our district for the next school year based on their preferences, spokeswoman Kristen Peterson said in an email to the Gazette. Current Hills Elementary principal Reagan Bosett was named new assistant principal of North Central Junior High beginning July 1. This administrative role will assist in our upcoming transition to a middle school model, Peterson said. In the fall, Iowa City School District is bringing 6th graders up from elementary schools into middle schools, which will teach 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Right now, the district follows the junior high model with only 7th and 8th graders in those buildings. 6 teachers and 10 support staff will move from Hills Elementary to Alexander Elementary. Students in the Hills Elementary School attendance boundary will attend Alexander Elementary School, 3571 Sycamore Street, Iowa City, about 7.4 miles from Hills. Only about 40 of the 100 students enrolled at Hills this year live in Hills. The rest are bused from the southern part of Iowa City or unincorporated areas of Johnson County. Alexander Elementary School has 2 to 3 sections of each grade. Hills, however, had 1 section of each grade with as few as 13 students in a classroom for 1 teacher, which is inefficient, Kurth said. When we look at the efficiency of our buildings, one thing that stands out is we start to hit a staffing efficiency sweet spot when we have a 3-section school, Kurth said. It allows us to better balance class sizes. Adding the Hills student body to Alexander Elementary will mean even more grades will have 3 sections. Adding 13 students from Hills to the incoming third grade class at Alexander Elementary, for example, wouldn't create the need for an entire additional section of a grade school, saving the cost of the district hiring a full-time teacher. The goal for class sizes at Alexander Elementary this fall is no more than 24 students in a kindergarten classroom, no more than 26 students in first and second grade classrooms, and fewer than 30 students for third through fifth grade classes, said Nick Proud, Iowa City Schools' chief human resource officer. The district uses a model called the weighted resource allocation model to control class sizes based on rates of students who face barriers in their education. The district is making adjustments to the model under the budget cuts, reducing 7 full-time educators through attrition, a cost savings of $630,000, but the budget cuts allow for integrity of the model to be kept, school board members said. Over the last 3 years, the Iowa City Community School District has reduced almost $25 million from its budget. This hasn't included non-renewable educators and staff for budget reasons, Kurth said, although staffing levels have been reduced over the years through natural attrition. The decision to close Hills was one of a $5.5 million in budget reduction efforts made by the school board in March. The district will need to trim an additional $2 million next year. Closing Hills Elementary was heatedly opposed by residents of the city of Hills and past, current, and future families of the elementary school's attendance boundary. The future of the Hills Elementary School building has yet to be decided by the Iowa City Community School Board. Hills leaders and residents agree they want to regain ownership of the Hills School building built by Liberty Township in the 1960s and sold to the Iowa City School District for $1 when the town joined the district later that decade. Student Family Transition Plan. The Iowa City Community School District has convened a transition committee made up of 13 school leaders from Hills and Alexander Elementary Schools to help families with the transition to their new elementary school in the fall. The district is holding an open house at Alexander Elementary on May 13th, and 3 more events will be held over the summer to help families with the transition. And finally, on the front page, advocates expect new push for pesticide tort protections next year. Bill passed Iowa Senate, but was not considered in the Iowa House this year, by Aaron Murphy, Gazette, Des Moines Bureau. One in an occasional series of articles about issues that are likely to return for debate in next year's session in the Iowa legislature. A proposal to prohibit lawsuits over warning labels on pesticides, if the product already has a qualifying warning label, sparked a debate this year at the Iowa Capitol about the role of pesticides in crop production on the state's economy and on the public health of Iowa farmers. The proposed legislation ultimately failed to gain sufficient support among Iowa lawmakers to pass into law this year. The topic is likely to return to the legislative agenda in 2025. The bill was proposed by the pesticide manufacturer Bayer, which has multiple crop science plants in Iowa. Bayer makes the glyphosate-based herbicide Roundup and has faced lawsuits nationwide from individuals claiming the company failed to warn consumers of the potential health risks of the weed killer. Jess Christensen, the head of crop science and sustainability communications for Bayer, said Monday that she hopes to continue the discussion with Iowa lawmakers next year. She said the resources Bayer must devote to defending Roundup from lawsuits is not sustainable for the company. It's not a sustainable business model for us, so we are looking at various strategies to figure out how do we really keep important tools such as Roundup on the market for farmers, Christensen said. We really want to do everything we possibly can to make sure that there's access to these tools for farmers. So we're going to continue, and that's one of the reasons we want to continue the dialogue. The legislative proposal, Senate File 2412, passed the Iowa Senate on a 30-19 vote that was mostly party line, with only Republicans supporting and four Republicans joining all Democrats in voting against. The proposal did not receive any legislation attention in the Iowa House. Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, a Republican from New Hartford, said recently on Iowa PBS, Iowa Press, that the debate over the bill was difficult. It was a very difficult issue trying to decide whether to land on that, Grassley said on Iowa Press. Grassley went on to express concern with how the lawsuits were affecting Bayer and its facilities in Iowa. I think you've seen some of the impacts it has had on Bayer as a company. We have to realize it's having an impact, and the largest facility they have in creation of Roundup is in Iowa, Grassley said. So the question gets back to me is, where do we want to source our things within agriculture? It could be Roundup or this herbicide in this instance. It could be something else some other time. I just don't want us to become more dependent on something that's not produced here in Iowa or in America and have to look to other countries, maybe even some that are unfriendly, that produce these products. Roundup has received significant scrutiny over health claims and its link to the development of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. About 165,000 cancer claims have been brought in the United States against Bayer over exposure to the weed killer, according to reporting by Reuters. Many are resolved as part of a $6.9 billion settlement in 2020, but about 54,000 remain. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency found that glyphosate is unlikely to be a human carcinogen and that there are no risks of concern to human health when used in accordance with the current label. However, a U.S. appeals court ordered the agency to reconsider these findings in 2022. A World Health Organization cancer agency in 2015 found glyphosate as likely capable of causing cancer, but European Union regulators have determined there was not sufficient evidence for that finding. Iowa has the fastest growing rate of new cancers in the nation and the second highest cancer rate overall. Physicians and public health professionals have said it's time to look more closely at how Iowa's agriculture might be contributing. Opponents of the proposed legislation expressed concern that it would strip Iowans of a legal avenue to challenge pesticide manufacturers over adverse health effects caused by prolonged exposure to pesticides. Critics contend that such a bill would leave Iowa farmers without legal recourse. Supporters of the bill argued that it is limited in scope, that it would prohibit only lawsuits over labeling once a product meets labeling requirements from federal regulators. The Iowa Farm Bureau, Iowa Corn Growers Association, and Iowa Association of Business and Industry are among the Iowa groups that registered in support of the bill, according to state lobbying records. A multi-state coalition of agricultural groups that supports legal protection for glyphosate also includes the Iowa Soybean Association. The Gazette was unable to obtain a comment on the legislation from the Iowa Farm Bureau or Iowa Corn Growers Association, who deferred to Bayer. The groups who lobbied against the proposal this year include organizations that represent attorneys and environmental groups. Similar legislative proposals have been introduced in Missouri and Idaho. In Iowa Today, Ethics Board scolds school officials over campaign by Caleb McCullough, Gazette, Lee, Des Moines Bureau. The Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board admonished five Pleasant Valley Community School District staff, as well as a current and former school board member, for using public email accounts for campaign purposes. The decision, which carries no fine, was the result of a complaint made in February by former school board candidate Amy McCabe. The complaint alleged the school staff and elected officials' use of school emails to discuss campaign matters before the November 2023 election violated Iowa law. State law prohibits the use of public resources, which can include email accounts, to campaign. The board voted unanimously to issue the admonishments during its April 18th meeting. An admonishment can be given for minor violations and is not considered discipline or subject to appeal. The district, based in Bettendorf, serves about 5,500 students. In a batch of emails from last fall included in McCabe's complaint, school administrators and candidates discussed candidate filings, message strategy, and other candidates using their school emails. Some school staff detailed their support for certain candidates and discussed getting yard signs for themselves and others. Superintendent Brian Sturz, his secretary Deborah Damon, and the staff members Kelsey Aubaugh, Margaret Doherty, and Tony Hyatt are all included in the admonishment. School board president Nicole Wagel, as well as former member Tracy Rivera, were also admonished. 10 others named in the complaint were not found to have committed a violation. The emails show Superintendent Sturz discussed campaign questions with a member of board who was up for re-election and advised a board member on talking points. Damon expressed support for certain board members in emails and promised to campaign on their behalf. Using her school email, she provided board members with lists of voters in their district and asked about yard signs for a coworker. She also discussed candidates' nomination petitions and the challenge process. I'm behind you 1,000% and will be making calls to people I know of on your behalf, she said in one email to Wagel. In another email to board member Molly Brockman, Damon said she would round up some votes for Brockman. Other staff discussed yard signs and advised on campaign points. In a statement, Sturz said the ethics board did not provide anyone at the school a copy of the complaint, and the school officials did not receive a chance to respond before the ethics board acted. He said school officials had taken steps to prevent similar violations. As the district was never made aware of the complaint, or able to offer additional information to the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board prior to the admonishment, the district was never able to provide information gained by Pleasant Valley during its review, Sturz stated. Pleasant Valley understands the importance of exercising care and will continue to work to ensure full compliance with Iowa's government and campaign laws. Wagel said she felt blindsided, but that he views the admonishment as informational guidance moving forward. To receive an admonishment from the State Ethics Board is nothing to sneeze at, Ethics Board member James Albert said at a meeting. It's nothing that you want in the newspaper. It's nothing that you want to happen. It isn't nothing. Olivia Allen of the Quad City Times contributed to this report. Iowa Nursing Home Administrator Surrenders License After Violations by Clark Kaufman. Iowa Capital Dispatch. The former administrator at one of Iowa's most troubled nursing homes has agreed to surrender her license. In a rare disciplinary action, the Iowa Board of Nursing Home Administrators earlier this month charged Tara Berenson of Eagle Grove, who ran the Aspire of Gowrie Care Facility in Webster County in 2022, with violating the standards of her profession. At the same time the charges were publicly filed, the board agreed to accept Berenson's decision to resolve the case by voluntarily surrendering her license. The board action has no immediate practical effect on Berenson's license expired in December. However, in order to have her license reinstated, Berenson will now have to show that such action would be in the public interest. The board's charges were based in part on an October 2022 state inspection at the 46-bed Aspire of Gowrie. That inspection resulted in citations for failing to provide residents with a safe environment, failure to prevent inappropriate sexual activity between residents, failure to ensure the staff was trained in spotting and reporting dependent adult abuse, failure to ensure all workers were subjected to a background check, failure to ensure the staff was skilled and competent, and failure to ensure a nurse was on duty at least 8 hours per day. 2 months later, the facility was cited for additional violations, including failure to correct the previously cited deficiencies and failure to provide the staff with personal protective equipment as they cared for residents diagnosed with COVID-19. Between January 2017 and March 2023, the Iowa Board of Nursing Home Administrators publicly sanctioned only 3 administrators, despite state inspections citing care facilities for numerous violations tied directly to administrators' actions. The violations were tied to physical abuse, unwarranted evictions, falsification of records, and patient dumping. $197,230 in fines. Since Berenson's departure from Aspire of Gowrie in January 2023, the home has continued to be cited for violations. Currently is one of the 2 Iowa nursing homes on the federal government's list of special focus facilities, which are some of the worst care facilities in the nation. Aspire of Gowrie has been on the list for 7 months. The most recent incident at Gowrie Home involves a resident who choked to death on his dinner in early January. The staff at the home was aware the man was at risk for choking and had given him the Heimlich maneuver on 3 prior occasions. In addition to being cited for the resident's death, Aspire of Gowrie was cited for numerous other violations, including a strong offensive urine odor in one area of the building. A maintenance worker told inspections he was aware of the smell, but the facility did not have the budget to buy the cleansers to get the smell out. The home also was cited for failure to ensure all residents were being seen by a physician once every 60 days, failure to ensure residents were given at least 2 showers per week, failure to respond appropriately to residents injured in falls, failure to respond appropriately to residents' weight loss, and failure to offer or provide residents with their full meals and their nighttime snacks. Since October 2022, Aspire of Gowrie has been cited for 114 quality of care violations and been the focus of 26 complaints. Federal records indicate that in the past 3 years, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has fined Aspire of Gowrie a total of $197,230. On several occasions in the past 2 years, Aspire of Gowrie has been cited for the same serious Class 1 violation, failing to provide a safe environment for residents. The safety violations were tied to a failure to protect residents from sexual abuse, squirting glue rather than eye drops into a resident's eye, inoperable door alarms, and on January 5th, choking death. Last year, Aspire of Gowrie had CMS's lowest possible rating for overall quality health care inspections and staffing levels. Currently, the home has no CMS ratings at all due to its status as a special focus facility. Federal records indicate the home is a for-profit venture owned by Black Hawk Healthcare, a limited liability corporation, and that Bruce Wertheim of Beacon Health Management in Tampa, Florida, owns 100% of that company and exerts managerial operational control of the home. Court records indicate that in 2021, Beacon purchased the 10-facility Pearl Valley chain of Iowa nursing homes for $24.2 million. The entity that brokered the deal said the homes were generating $35 million in annual revenue, with cash profits totaling $3.5 million per year. At the time, a state nursing home regulator named Todd Frank was recruited by Beacon to head the company's Iowa operations. Court records indicate Frank then left his $89,000 per year job as deputy administrator of the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals Health Facilities Division to join Beacon at an annual salary of $150,000. This article first appeared in the Iowa Capital Dispatch. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for April 30th, 2024. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Sandra K. Cox was born on October 15, 1952 in Vinton, Iowa to Eugene and Irma Jean Powers. She passed away on April 24, 2024 at the age of 71. Sandra loved her neighbors and the Vinton community, and the family would like to invite all to attend a memorial service at 6 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd, 2024, at the Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, 307 North K Avenue, Vinton, Iowa. Mary Lou Vavrek, 76, of Elberon, was beautifully and peacefully welcomed home by her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Thursday, April 25th, 2024, after a very brief battle with neuroendocrine carcinoma. She was surrounded by her loving family. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, May 3rd, at St. Michael Catholic Church in Belle Plaine, with a luncheon to follow. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. with a rosary at 3:30 p.m. on Thursday, May 2nd, at Robick Newhouse Funeral Services, 1704 7th Avenue, Belle Plaine. Burial will take place at Mount Calvary Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. Verna Piper, 86, of Iowa City, passed away on April 28, 2024, at her residence. Verna's family will gather for her funeral at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, May 1st, 2024, at Gloria Day Lutheran Church in Iowa City. Interment will be at Oakland Cemetery. Monica M. Pearsall of Cedar Rapids passed away on Friday, April 26, 2024, at the Mayo Clinic, St. Mary's Campus, Rochester, Minnesota. Monica passed peacefully surrounded by her loving family. A funeral mass will be held at St. Wenceslaus Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, on Thursday, May 2, 2024, at 10 a.m., with Father Chris Pajaski officiating. A luncheon will follow at the St. Wenceslaus Glovic Center. Wayne Gerard Lone Tree. Wayne Gerard passed away January 12, 2024, on the coldest day of the winter. We will now have a memorial service, military honors, and a luncheon on Saturday, May 4, 2024, at the Lone Tree American Legion at 11 a.m. James E. Hunter, 66, of Monticello, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, April 23, 2024, at University of Iowa's Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City after a brief illness. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturday, May 4, 2024, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Monticello, Iowa. Funeral Mass will commence at 12 p.m. with Reverend Paul Baldwin officiating. Interment will be held at a later date. Donna F. Sander, age 76, of Loudoun, passed away on Sunday, April 28, 2024, surrounded by her family at UIHC in Iowa City after a short battle with cancer. Funeral services will be held on Thursday, May 2, 2024, at Trinity Lutheran Church in Loudoun at 10:30 a.m., with Pastor Daniel Redditch officiating. Burial will follow in the Trinity Lutheran Cemetery in Loudoun. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. at Chapman Funeral Home in Clarence on Wednesday, May 1st. David J. Gogol, 72, of Dyersville, Iowa, passed away at home surrounded by his family on Saturday, April 27, 2024. Visitation for David will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 30, 2024, at the Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville, Iowa, where a prayer service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Visitation will continue after 9 a.m. on Wednesday at the funeral home. Services for David will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, May 1st, 2024, at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Worthington, Iowa, with Reverend Chris Pajeski officiating. Celebrating will be Reverend Mark Osterhaus. Burial will be held in St. Paul's Cemetery in Worthington, Iowa, with full military honors afforded by the Dyersville American Legion Post, number 137. Ronnie Kronbach, age 87, of Marengo, passed away peacefully on Sunday, April 28, 2024, after a long private battle with cancer. Private family graveside services will be held. The family is planning a celebration of life gathering in the summer of 2024. Closter Funeral Home, Marengo, is assisting the family with final arrangements. In sports, Washington claims Super Meet title. Warriors shoot 322 to win by 8 strokes. Lynn Mars Rupp earns medalist honor at 1 under 71 by K.J. Pilcher, The Gazette, Cedar Rapids. They all showed up and showed out. Cedar Rapids, Washington's girls golf team showed the potential of its best lineup. The Warriors had their top team available and carded a total of 322, winning the title at the Mississippi Valley Conference Supermeet on Monday at Ellis Golf Course. Washington topped runner-up Western Dubuque by 8 strokes. Lynn Mars' Morgan Rupp shot 1 under 71 for medalist honors. "It's nice to see them playing their game," Washington assistant coach Ronnie Blocklinger said. "They're having fun." The Warriors' Maya Messenger placed third with a 76, and Jane Peterson was 2 shots back for 5th. Messenger and Lily Bell Barker juggle varsity golf and tennis in the spring, causing some scheduling conflicts. "Everybody was on hand Monday. I think we have great potential, and we're firing on all cylinders at all full length strength," Messenger said. "We've all been working really hard over the winter. It also helps that we're a tight-knit group. We've brought everyone in, and all we're firing today with our A game. Camaraderie and strong chemistry also plays a part in their success. The relationships extend beyond rounds, putting greens, and driving ranges," Peterson said. "Her best friends are on the team, and most of the golfers have fun together on the course." "It's not just best team score-wise," Peterson said. "I think we have a great team connection. I love the girls." Messenger, listed as the team's number 3 golfer, said Washington led Washington this round. She tallied 3rd birdies, including the number 11 and 16 holes, for an even par 36 on the back 9. Attention to her short game allowed her to perform well despite the chilly and windy conditions. "I know my teammates and I've been out weekends and after practice and stayed late to focus on our short games, our putting and chipping," Messenger said. "I really worked hard on that and focused on that today to convert a lot of birdie putts and getting up and down better than I have been. I got up and down a lot on the back 9. I had a couple birdies that helped my round. I gave myself a little cushion to where I did bogey, I wouldn't have too much stress." Washington placed all 4 of its scorers in the top 15 of the individual standings. In addition to Messenger and Peterson in the top 5, Barker posted an 83 for 12th, and freshman Shaylin Munson rounded out the foursome with an 85. "At this point, I think we can make a run for state," said Peterson, who was the Class 4A state runner-up last season. "It's just really exciting to have 4 scores and a 5th if we need it, which is amazing." Rupp shared medalist honors with Messenger at the MVC Supermeet a year ago. She was the only golfer to break 75 on Monday, sinking an 8-foot putt on her final hole and breaking par. "The difference between even par and 1 under is quite a bit," the Lions 2023 4A state champion said. "It feels like it's more than one stroke at least. I told myself to make this. End with a birdie and you'll feel better about your round." It was the second of the bookend birdies to her round. She birdied number 16 to start the meet. She added 2 more on the front, notched birdies on the numbers 5 and 9. Rupp won by 4 strokes over Iowa City Liberty's Isabella Peterson. The field had 8 of the top 25 ranked golfers according to Bounds combined adjusted averages. "I feel like this is a really good win for me," Rupp said. "There are a lot of really good players in this meet. The field is stacked. I'm proud of the score I put up." In boys golf Monday, Wamac East Divisional at Manchester, Pin Oak Golf Course, par 71. Team standings, number 1, Solon, 304. Number 2, West Delaware, 316. Number 3, Marion, with 323. Number 4, Independence, 329. Number 5, Center Point Urbana, 350. And number 6, Mount Vernon, 355. Individual scores, number 1 was Isaiah Zosky, S-O-L, 68. Number 3, Jack McCarty, 75. Number 3, Ty Ethan Callahan, 77. Josh Knoll, 77. In boys tennis, the rankings, Iowa Boys Tennis Coaches Poll, in Class 2A, number 1, Waukee Northwest, record of 11-1. Number 2, Lynn Mar, a 12-0 record. Number 3, Pleasant Valley, 11-0. Iowa City West is number 4 with 9-2. Number 5, Mason City, 8-2. Number 6, Cedar Rapids, Washington, 10-3. Number 7, West Des Moines Valley, 7-1. Number 8, West Des Moines Dowling, 5-2. Number 9, Bettendorf, 6-4. And number 10, Cedar Falls, 7-8. Others receiving votes, Cedar Rapids Prairie, 21. Waukee, Ames, Des Moines Roosevelt, Iowa City High, Iowa City Liberty, and Marshalltown. In Class 1A, first place, Dubuque Wallert with a 9-1 record. Second place, Cedar Rapids Xavier, 9-2. Third, Pella with 7-0. Number 4, North Polk, 7-1. Number 5, Waverly Shell Rock, 8-3. Number 6, Boone with a 10-2 record. Number 7, Decorah, 7-3 record. Number 8, Sergeant Bluff Luton, 9-0. Number 9, Shenandoah, 9-0. And number 10, Glenwood, 7-1. Linn County has a new director of sustainability by Marissa Payne, The Gazette. Kara Madison started this week as Linn County's new sustainability director, spearheading environmental initiatives in the Iowa's second largest county. Madison started Monday in the role, succeeding Tamara Marcus, who resigned last year as the department's first director. According to the county's jobs website, the director is paid an annual salary of $75,254.40. In the position, Madison will lead Linn County sustainability efforts with a focus on environmental health and applying best practices to the areas of water, stormwater management, land use, transportation, and environmental conservation. As director, Madison is responsible for conducting Linn County's greenhouse gas inventory, research opportunities related to carbon offset and carbon trading, provide input into decisions about county facilities and purchases with a sustainability focus, and applying an equity and economic lens in decision-making. The Linn County Sustainability Council, a volunteer panel made up of Linn County residents, will support the director's work. Madison has experience in environmental and natural resource administration and compliance. She has contributed to both public and private sector consulting, as well as nonprofit organizations. She brings experience with engaging stakeholders, grant writing, and administering programs according to the county, which are key skills to manage environmental initiatives. She has a regulatory background with the state of California, and managing municipal permits equips her with a deep understanding of compliance and governance with the water resources and compliance domain. Most recently, Madison worked for Stantec as a senior geologist and project manager. Before that position, Madison was the water resources manager for the city of Cedar Rapids. Madison earned a Bachelor of Science degree in environmental science and geoscience from the University of Iowa. She also took environmental engineering coursework at Iowa State University and received a teaching license from Morningside College. Madison has a passion for addressing the needs of Iowans and continues to keep her finger on the pulse of the industry, according to the county. We look forward to welcoming Kara to Linn County, Linn County Supervisor Chair Kristen Running Marcourt said in a statement. We will play a central role in coordinating sustainability initiatives with other county departments and engaging stakeholders through Linn County to move our community forward. Madison comes to the county after Marcus resigned about 3 years into the role to launch the Empowered Solutions Collective, a new sustainability and equity consulting service primarily serving corridor-based local governments, businesses, and nonprofits. Supervisor Louis Zumbach, a lone Republican on the three-member Board of Supervisors, has at times looked to restructure the department that has worked to advance sustainability practices to enhance resiliency to disasters. In the county's process of drafting the budget for fiscal 2025, which spans July 1 through June 30, 2025, Zumbach reported making the sustainability leader a lower-ranking manager instead of a director. The Democrats on the board, Running Marcourt and Ben Rogers, didn't support that switch. The directors also oversee a resiliency coordinator who the county hired last year to focus on improving the county's disaster response and strengthening relationships with marginalized communities most affected by natural disasters. Crashes in Delaware, Jones counties killed two, by Aaron Jordan, the Gazette. The Iowa State Patrol has identified two men killed in crashes in recent days in eastern Iowa. Kyle J. Kelchin, 39, of Manchester, died Friday afternoon when his utility terrain vehicle was struck by a pickup truck, the patrol said. Kelchin was driving south on 190th Avenue east of Ryan in Delaware County about 2:15 p.m. Friday when he failed to obey a stop sign at 310th Street, the patrol reported. Gerald J. Beats, 67, and Susan E. Beats, 65, of Monticello, were driving east on 310th and struck Kelchin's UTV when he failed to yield. Both vehicles came to rest in a ditch southeast of the intersection. Kelchin, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was transported to the hospital but later died, the patrol said. The Beatses had minor injuries. Another crash, Saturday, northwest of Olin in Jones County, killed Maurice V. Hennessy, 96, of Ryan. Evidence on the road indicate Hennessy's 2000 Ford Focus wagon was traveling west on Newport Road on the wrong side before running off the road into the ditch and striking a road sign, the patrol said. The car then recrossed the road and hit a tree on the right side of Newport Road where the car burst into flames. When the firefighters responded to the blaze, they found Hennessy in the vehicle. The patrol continues to investigate both crashes. Sex offender charged with abusing Cedar Rapids child, by Trish Mahaffey, the Gazette, Cedar Rapids. A Cedar Falls man who has a previous sex offense conviction was formally charged Saturday after being arrested on a warrant for sex abuse and sex offender registry violations. Clinton John Mullins, 36, during an initial appearance, was charged with second-degree sexual abuse and sex offender registration violation, second offense. He is accused of sexually abusing a child under 14 on November 1, 2023, in a southwest Cedar Rapids home, according to a criminal complaint. Mullins also is accused of failing to comply with the sex offender registry requirements. He has a previous conviction of sexual abuse in Wright County and registry violations in Bremer and Blackhawk counties, according to court records. A judge ordered $50,000 cash-only bond for Mullins pending his trial, which hasn't been set at this time. If convicted of both charges, he faces up to 30 years in prison. On the Insight page, guest column, David Osterberg, Lose Your EV Range Anxiety. I've driven an electric car for several years. It's quiet, quick, and comfortable. When people ask me about charging, I tell them I have about 250 miles of range. I also tell them that cold temperature, fast driving, and heavy wind will reduce that range. I have a 220 outlet in my garage and can get a full charge overnight, so local trips are a breeze. Long-distance trips create few obstacles. I went to Des Moines last month, 140 miles from Mount Vernon. I drove Highway 30 and connected by the four-lane from Marshalltown to Altoona, where there is a Tesla supercharger. After 2 hours on the road, I was ready for a restroom at the Quick Star next to the bank of eight chargers. After I returned to my car, my screen told me I needed about 18 more minutes to get my battery back to 80% capacity. I could skip the extra time and charge on the way home again at the Altoona Supercharger or another one a mile from Interstate 80 in downtown Des Moines. I stayed the extra minutes. After lunch, I told the car I wanted to go home. It told me to charge just off Interstate 80 in Grinnell. I was ready for a cup of coffee, and when I got back to my car, I needed only another 10 minutes. I had the range to stop at either Hy-Vee store in Coralville or Iowa City that have superchargers. Wilson Avenue Hy-Vee also has a bank of eight chargers. I stayed the extra 10 minutes and got to my garage with 20% of my battery still charged. The next morning, my battery was filled again. My credit card statement tells me the stops in Altoona and Grinnell cost $8.68 and $5.58. Electricity costs half that at home. 2 years ago, my wife and I drove to Frederick, Maryland, Charlottesville, Virginia, Asheville, North Carolina, and home through the Great Smoky Mountains. The screen on the car told me where to stop each time to get charged. It even guided me to get each bank of chargers. The federal government is building a supercharger network and adding more chargers every week, so all electric cars will soon be able to do the same as mine. But for now, so long as you have a Tesla or, starting this month, a new Ford Electric, you can go anywhere in America close to an interstate and not worry about finding a charge. Don't be afraid to buy an electric car. The technology is here and the learning curve is short, and you may get credit on your taxes. David Osterberg lives in Mount Vernon. Guest column, Gage Miskimen, say yes to the side quests. Hi, my name is Gage Miskimen. I'm a Marion City Council member and the Community Engagement Coordinator at Four Oaks. If you recognize my name, it's because I'm a former journalist too. And like around 500,000 Iowans each year, I've faced challenges with my mental health a time or two. May is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and about 21% of Iowans have experienced a mental illness, according to Mental Health America. That percentage is equal to 503,000. We could fill around 7 Kinnick stadiums with all of us. You and I are not alone. Being diagnosed with anxiety and depression, my brain will sometimes try to tell me I am alone or I'm not enough to, or everyone hates me. For some of you reading this, I'm sure your brain does the same sometimes too. I've been to the hospital for frightening anxiety symptoms I didn't understand, blurry vision, numbing of the arm and face, confusion, etc. I even had a particular moment in recent years where I seriously didn't want to be here anymore. But I am here, and if you're reading this, you're here too. If you're struggling or don't know where to start, the Linn County Mental Health Access Center is an amazing resource in our community that now is open 24/7 for walk-ins. Director Aaron Foster told me that 30% of their patients in the 21 to 35 year age demographic said if they hadn't gone there when they needed the help, they wouldn't have sought help at all. I did therapy. I practiced gratitude. I take medication for anxiety. These are all good, important things. I think of it as fitness for my brain because mental health and wellness is physical health and wellness. But there's no permanent cure. I still feel that physical discomfort, or I feel outside of my body at times, and I'm okay with that. I've noticed over the years a lot of us are going through this. Why does it seem like these feelings are becoming more common for all age groups, but especially those in my generation? Are we still experiencing consequences from the shared trauma and long-term isolation of a pandemic? Maybe it's partially due to the fact that we experience a lot of life through our screens. We're affected by algorithms that know we all yearn for connection and community somewhere out there. But the community isn't out there, it's right here. Again, we are in it together. What has helped me the most recently is finding connection in this community, not only with being involved in City Council and Four Oaks, though being able to help others alleviates my anxiety for sure, but also just being open to new experiences. My friend Tara Templeman taught me to start saying yes to the side quests in life. Go to that new play with the local theater. Join a new volunteer group. Play in that softball league. Go out of your way and message that old friend. Intentionally do whatever it takes to push yourself when your instinct is making you want to shut down and be alone. It works and it feels damn good. Plus, the side quests in life are really what life is all about after all. Appreciate the little moments, but also go out and create your own for yourself and for others. Gage Miskimen is a Marion City Council member and the Community Engagement Coordinator at Four Oaks. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for April 30th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice, physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.